The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Track Talk here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Covell running the show back there at Sports Radio 810. Todd Surprise running the show for us here at RBN, the Racing Boys Broadcasting Network. My partner, Kirk Elliott, to my side right here. Kirk, how you been doing, bud?
Doing great. Boy, it's not long now. Christmas time is here, isn't it?
It is just about here. And we want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas that's out there right now.
That's right. Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah. You got your shopping done?
No, I don't have my shopping done.
Kind of like typical male. I've gotten like three things finished. And two of them my wife's already bought to have me wrap. So, you know, I don't have to say
I'm a last-minute shopper.
I'm a last-minute shopper.
Kirk, so when do you go shopping?
Well, traditionally for me, Christmas Eve. That's what I've always said it. I'm a little better than that than I used to be, maybe a day or two ahead of Christmas Eve, but for a long time it was Christmas Eve. I went out and did all my shopping.
I like that. That's how I used to do it.
And you know, what I liked about it was exhilarating because the time was, you know, at a premium, and you had to really bear down and do it. And so it felt exhilarating to me, and it felt exciting because there was a hard deadline.
That's right.
You had to get it all done right away.
I liked it when you used to be able to. I mean, I lived by Oak Park Mall, and I would go Christmas Eve to Oak Park Mall just experience that. It's still pretty cool, man.
Right.
I mean, you know, just to have that hubbub and craziness of a mall, it's insane on Christmas.
Hey, what was the name of the mall that was over there at State Line and
State Avenue?
635.
Off of State Avenue?
Yeah.
Yeah. Indian Springs Mall?
Indian Springs.
Yeah. You could call it that now.
Completely gone.
Yeah, it's a big, there's a police station there.
You know, mall.
Yeah, young people today wouldn't believe there used to be a mall there.
Yeah.
You know, that. It's kind of crazy that we don't see malls like we used to. Back when we were kids, malls were real popular.
Remember the old Bannister Mall down there?
Yeah, at Independence. Independence
City.
Center.
Yeah, it's gone.
All those are. But Oak Park Mall is still thriving. If you want to go do a mall experience, get your Santa on and go do all that, you can head right over to Oak Park Mall today and get all Christmas up if you want to do it.
Right.
Wasn't Blue Ridge Mall one of the oldest malls
Absolutely.
In the country?
Yeah, it was.
It was. Time? No doubt.
Yeah, I remember when I first moved to Kansas.
My mom
City,
used
to
work
Blue
out
Ridge
there,
Mall.
Be honest with you,
yeah.
Kirk. She worked at Macy's.
Her Jones store.
Macy's.
Was Macy's back then?
Macy's.
Yep.
Yeah, Macy's was
You remember
there.
The old Jones store?
I used to buy it. The Jones store used to be a Ticketmaster outlet back when they first started, so you have all these long-haired dudes showing up at Jones Store at 10 a.m. to get their kick tickets for their Kiss concert or their Van Halen concert.
And, right.
All these women be like, what are these guys doing here?
I want to give a shout-out to Scott, who's listening in from Fort Myers Beach, Florida.
Boy,
yeah,
that's a good place to be.
Man,
right now.
That's,
how about that?
I would love to be down in Cape Coral, right by Fort Myers Beach. That's where my cousin David lives. And, man, I'd love to live down there.
Florida's a good place to be this time. Although, you know, we haven't had any really hard winter weather yet.
The problem is now that I've got a grandson, I'm not moving away.
Yeah.
I'm not moving away.
Yeah, it kind of changes things, doesn't it?
It does change things.
And you're slowly indoctrinating your grandson into racing, aren't you?
I'm hopeful that he'll want to drive a junior sprint. Eventually,
I would imagine that would be very possible with you hanging around him as much as you do.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be babysitting him on Fridays, just so you know.
At the very least, he'll be a big race fan.
Right. So when he's a kid and he stays with me on Fridays, I might just take him to the races.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he'll have that exposure.
Right.
He'll be at the racetrack.
Yeah.
Speaking of races,
you know, last night at Gateway,
yeah.
What did you think of those races? It was a little cowboy up last night, wasn't it?
It was good action. It was smoother on Thursday night than last night, although the action was good last night. We saw some great slide jobs last night, some good action. Expect more of the same tonight. Hey, hats off to the track crew. I thought they did a pretty good job prepping the racetrack for good racing action.
Well, there was a little bit of a controversy last night with the 25 car.
Jason Fager.
Jason Fager. He kind of rammed. Who was the other guy?
Carson Hocevar.
Carson Hocevar.
The NASCAR guy.
Yeah.
Carson.
Carson Hocevar watching NASCAR races.
So what did you think about that retaliation? Because
I thought it was bad.
Because, listen, he got ran down into the barrier and hit his left rear tire and knocked his left rear tire down, and then he retaliated by just ripping the whole side of his car off. What did you think about that?
Yeah, the left rear of the car. I just thought it was a dirty move on Jason Fager's part. First of all, I didn't think Carson Hocevar did anything wrong. He was down on the inside of the racetrack, got pinched into the wall. What was he supposed to do?
Right.
He got up into the left rear. Jason Fager's car cut his tire down. Jason wasn't happy about that, so
right.
He retaliated on the cool-down lap, and instead of running completely into the back
of Carson Hocevar's
car, he ripped off the whole left corner of his car and almost got up into the driver's cockpit.
Right.
That's a bad move, and I felt the officials should have come down hard on Jason Fager and parked him for the night for doing that. Carson could have got hurt if he had an arm out the window, or he got up pretty close to where the driver was sitting.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah. So I thought it was uncalled for. I like Jason Fager as a driver. He's one of the great late model drivers out in Illinois. He's won a lot of races in his time, but that retaliation on Carson Hocevar was totally uncalled for.
Ricky Thornton Jr., he picks up the win last night with the late models. What did you think about that? He kind of pulled away there a little bit at the end, didn't he?
Yeah, that was on a restart with about 11 laps to go. He found the inside. Now, before that, the restart before that, there was a move by Mike Harrison that he showed down to the inside that you get past that. Harrison was able to get past. Actually, that was the modified race, so scratch that. Now, the restart, we'll talk about that modified race with Mike Harrison here in a little bit. I got confused with those two races right there.
Yeah, Mike Harrison was a modified driver.
That was in the modified race.
Right, yeah.
Okay, getting back to the late model race. That slide move that Ricky Thornton Jr. pulled on Chris Simpson was a classic move. He got up, and Chris Simpson didn't like that move that he made.
Right.
He didn't like that at all because he pulled up and stopped right in front of him. But I thought it was a good move by Ricky Thornton Jr., and that shows right there why he's one of the great late model drivers in the country right now. That was going to be a hard move to make, but he was able to see the inside of that, got up, slid up in front of Simpson, and once he got out in front, he checked out.
Kirk, Ricky Thornton Jr. picked up his 40th win last night. What do you think about that? 40 wins in one season.
That's incredible.
It's unbelievable.
And he's a likely winner tonight, is he? I think they're going to have some sort of a redraw, so we don't know exactly sure where Ricky Thornton's going to start. But the top three finishers out of the two preliminary nights, Thursday and Friday, are locked in. So we got six drivers that are locked into tonight's main event, but we don't know where everybody's going to start.
Ricky Thornton Jr. is also locked into the modified race as well.
Yeah, because he won the preliminary race on Thursday night.
Yeah.
So he won a prelim in the modifieds Thursday and a late model last night. So
Jordan Kubowski.
Ricky Thornton Jr. is the star of the show so far.
Jordan Kubowski picked up the win last night, but Drake Troutman, he led a bunch of that race last night, too. At the five car of Troutman, he led a bunch of that race.
And this is where Mike Harrison made the move down to the inside. He showed the way down to the inside and was able to pass the eventual winner, Jordan Grabowski, for second place. Only another yellow flag came out. and they had to do it again. So Harrison wasn't able to make that pass on Jordan Grabowski's stick.
Right.
So they come back on the next restart. Grabowski saw what Harrison did that time before, and he made the move and was able to get the run on Drake Troutman for the lead and win that race.
You know, the best battle of the night was between Troutman and Mike Harrison. Those two were battling it out pretty good right there. Oh, no, I should say Mike Harrison and Kyle Steffens. They were, those two were battling it out for the final transfer position, and that was a heck of a battle between those two.
But I don't think Jordan Grabowski wins that race after Harrison was able to pass him for second. That other yellow flag came out. They had to do it again. I don't think Grabowski is going to win that race had there not been a yellow flag come out after Harrison passed Grabowski for second place.
Right.
Do you agree with that?
No, I think that Jordan Grabowski was the fastest car last night, to be honest with you. It looked like to me that Troutman was running the top, and it looked like he had a really soft spring on the right rear of that car because it was really laying over on the right rear of that car. And he was making that thing work up there on the top. But eventually, Grabowski, he got around him on the middle of the racetrack, right?
Yeah. Hats off to Trenton Berry, who, you know, these guys made all their predictions before the race start.
Yeah.
Grabowski was starting fourth. I'm picking Jordan Grabowski, Trenton Berry said. So I guess he knows he's modifieds, right?
I'm not picking against Ricky Thornton Jr., to be honest with you.
He's got a really good chance of sweeping both
the
modifieds and late models tonight.
No doubt.
What do you think the likelihood of him not only winning one of those races, but doubling up?
I think he's going to win both of those races, if you want to know the truth. He is the most dominant driver in late model racing right now.
Yeah.
And he's exceptional at driving a modified as well.
Yeah. Well, they asked him, I said, does it feel like riding a bike? And he said, yep, I felt comfortable, the modified. He's won a lot of modified races,
right,
too. So,
yeah.
Made his name as a modified driver before he jumped into a late model. We'll see him at the Chili Bowl, too, right?
Wasn't he an IMCA driver at one point during his career?
He's a two-time Super Nationals winner up at Boone.
Boone, right.
He's won the King of America at Humboldt. He's a former winner of the Grant Young-Ann's Memorial Race. So he's got crown jewel wins in the modified ranks. So that's where he got his start.
Kirk, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in sprint car racing right now. It looks like that Brett Marks and Parker Price Miller is going to move over to the High Limit Series.
They have
Parker Price Miller was a full-time
all-star
racer as well. So I'm a little shocked that Brett Marks is going to go over there and run the full schedule. Are you a little surprised?
Do you think it has
a
lot to do with the charter system that High Limit has put together for down the road? These team owners in the High Limit Series now have a stake in the series. They're like, I wouldn't call them part owners, but they have a stake in the series now.
Right.
Unlike the World of Outlaws, which, you know, they pay the tow money and the bonus money. High Limit Series has gone a different route. Plus, they have allowed the High Limit drivers to have the freedom to run whatever outside races they want to run. Don't you think that has a lot to do with it?
Well, I think it does. You know, the World of Outlaws restricts you to four races that you can run outside of the World of Outlaws. How many of those guys do you think are going to run in the month of March? Are going to run with the World of Outlaws?
Well, I think there will be a handful of them. I don't think they all will do it, but we'll see how many of those races they get in. Everybody's concerned about the weather in the month of March. This is one of the big reasons why High Limit didn't schedule races for the month of March. World of Outlaws has scheduled every weekend throughout March. We'll see how many of them they get in.
Right.
Because the weather's typically not very good. So we have 13 full-time high-limit drivers now. And as far as the World of Outlaws are concerned, we have 10 with the addition of a driver this past week, Bill Balog, the North Pole
Nightmare,
is now going to run for the Kevin Gobrick Rookie of the Year in the World of Outlaws, and he becomes the latest signee to the World of Outlaws. So here are the drivers for the High Limit Series. You've got Brad Sweet, Rico Abreu, Brent Marks, Casey Kane, Jacob Allen, Chris Windham, Corey Eliason, Zeb Wise, Justin Peck, Corey Day, Spencer Baston, Brennan Crouch, and Parker Price Miller. That's a pretty good group of drivers.
Yep, no
doubt. Here are the World of Outlaw drivers so far.
And you can find all these stories on RacingBoys.com as well. Right, Kirk?
That's right. Donnie Schatz, David Gravel, Sheldon Hodenshield, Logan Schuart, Giovanni Selzy, Bill Balog, Brock Zierfoss, Landon Crawley, Bill Rose, and Noah Gass. Still yet to decide are the two Roth Motorsports cars and Carson Messina.
I think they're going to stay with the Outlaws.
At least one of the Roth cars is going to stay with the
Outlaws. Maybe they'll split them up.
Could be.
Maybe one will run high limit, the 83 Junior car. You don't know what they're going to do with that.
But they didn't run the 83 Junior car full-time last year.
But
with Buddy Kofoid.
But Buddy Kofoid, if he wants to run a sprint car full-time, he could do that, right?
Yeah.
And I think the great pair would be with him to run with the 83 Junior car. Don't you think so?
And then James McFadden stay with the Outlaws with the 83 car. We'll see. But the other team and driver yet to commit is Phil Dietz, Jason Johnson Racing 41 car with Carson Macedo as the driver. What do you think's going to happen there? Well, I think we both expect them to stay with the Outlaws, but they've not made that commitment yet.
No, we haven't. I want to give a shout out to Tim, who's listening from Iowa City as well.
Welcome.
So, yeah.
The other driver that we're looking to see which direction he goes is Tyler Courtney in the Clawson Marshall number 7 car. Dallas Energy Drink as the main sponsor, which is a big sponsor for the World of Outlaws. Where's Tyler Courtney going to spend his summer next year?
Well, I think the biggest news maybe of the week is Taylor Reimer is going to be running a pavement late model race.
She's got her eyes on NASCAR, does she not?
Right.
She's going to run some...
Why doesn't Jade Avedisian get a break like that?
Well, she does. I think Jade probably has the bigger backing from Toyota, although both of them are Toyota drivers. The personal services contract that Toyota has signed with Jade Avedisian ensures that she's headed the NASCAR direction. She's got the full backing of Toyota. Taylor Reimer has not gotten the same agreement with Toyota as Jade Avedisian has, but Taylor Reimer is going to find herself in a pavement late model 24 times next year, which I think that's a good move for her. If she wants to go that route, then she's got to start getting some pavement experience.
Right.
And she's gonna get that beginning next year. And, you know, Taylor, I thought, really ended up the season strong in that midget. She qualified up front in a number of those races out in California. And she ran up front, and she really performed well in a midget car. But she's going to continue to run a midget next year, but also she's got at least 25 pavement races on the docket for next year. She'll be at the Chili Bowl, just like Jade will. But Reimer will be racing for Lee Falk Racing through her Toyota development contract. Mostly in weekly racing competition as she starts to get her feet wet. So she's got a development contract with Toyota, too, but I don't think it's quite on the level of what Jade has yet.
Right.
And Jade's going to be running a pavement.
She's got Yahoo sponsoring her, though. That's always a big plus when you got Yahoo sponsoring you.
Now, Jade is going to be running a pavement road racing schedule next year, along with a number of her midget racing commitments. Jade's not going for any points championships next year, but she's going to be running a number of midget races, including, I think, tonight out at DuQuoin, Illinois, indoors on Dirt Vision. There's big midget race out there indoors tonight. I think, what, Taylor and Jade will be at that race tonight, both of them?
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to, what are we going to have? Who are we going to play here first, Todd? What are we going to play? Which one do you want?
Probably Zeb Wise is a good one, I think.
Zeb Wise, yeah.
That was a really good interview, but we could, you know, like you said, Connor Wade as well, probably play that in the second segment, so, or the third segment, so
right,
either
right.
way.
Okay, all right, when we come back, Zeb Wise is going to join us right here on the show. This is a interview that we did on Monday on Mostly Motorsports, and it's with Zeb Wise, and we'll be back with more with Track Talk. It's all brought to you by Rod End Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. We'll be back with more in a moment. Stay tuned. Welcome back. It's Track Talk here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And it's all brought to you by Rod and Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. Kirk, you want to set this interview up?
Yeah, first of all, you saw a comment on there that said Jason Fager should have been parked for the weekend.
For the weekend.
You know what? Yeah. I think he's right about that. I think, yeah, I think that was a serious enough deal that I'm going to go along with what the poster said there.
Kenny said it.
Yeah, Kenny.
Yep.
I'm going to have to agree with you. That was a bad, that's as bad a payback and retaliation as I think I've ever seen on a dirt track.
You never seen me pay back people, have you, Kurt?
Yeah, but not like that.
No.
Did you ever try to go for the cockpit? I don't think he meant to go for the cockpit, but that's what ended up happening.
My big deal was with Dave Brundage in 2007. When I had a problem with him, when he was blocking me.
I remember that.
I crashed him out.
I was there that
but
night.
But I also crashed myself out as well.
That was before I even know you.
Right.
I remember that. So right. Paybacks are, you know, I get it, but on a cool-down lap when the yellow flag is still out, that's a no-no.
Right.
No matter but what Fager did last night was about as blatant as anything I'd seen.
Right.
Zeb Wise is the champion of the All-Star Series. He is going to be a full-timer with the High Limit Racing, with Rudine Racing, the 26 car. And he's, boy, at the end of the year, Scott, especially, what an impressive showing he had winning the All-Star race at Eldora, but he also won a World of Outlaw race at Port Royal, too, at the end of the year. So
right.
he ended up the season pretty strong, one of the rising young stars. We spoke with Zeb Wise earlier this week on Mostly Motorsports, and here is a portion of that conversation.
You had such a stellar year this year. You picked up 9 wins. And with the All-Star Circuit of Champions, how would you assess your year as a grade-wise?
Probably like a – well, are we just talking All-Stars or the entire year as a whole?
Well, the entire year as a whole, because I know that you ended up picking up a World of Outlaw win as well, right?
Yeah. I'd say probably like a B+, and – the only reason I would go that low is just, like, as far as an all-star year, we were great. We had a great year, picked up, obviously, a good amount of wins, and didn't have very many DNFs, and just all around was a great year, but we still had a few races that I wish I could have back, and Knoxville Nationals did not go our way at all. We had some other stuff going on besides just car and driver, but there's probably a few races throughout the year that I wish I could go back and redo. Overall was a really good year. My best year for sure as a driver, and become an all-star champion for the first time and, you know, winning at Eldora and winning a World of Outlaw race. It was really special year for sure.
Talk about that big win at Port Royal in the World of Outlaws. That was huge for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really cool. I feel like we've always been, or well, specifically this year, we've been pretty good at Port Royal every time we've been there. And I kind of thought, like, rolling in there with the Outlaws, I was like, maybe this will be our chance to get an Outlaw win because we were really good here the last time we were here. We really have been good there every time we've been there this year. So, especially after seeing Tyler win the first night, I was like, okay, well, I feel like if we can get qualified okay, then, you know, we can have a good shot at this. And the track was much more to my liking the second night. It was a lot slicker, cushion on the fence, and just kind of more to what we're used to when we go there. So, yeah, everything just kind of felt right. We qualified really well, won the heat race. I think we beat Brad in the heat race. And then, went into the dash. Maybe it was David. I can't remember who we beat in the heat race, but it was definitely right. A confidence booster for sure.
Yeah.
And then went into the dash, and I think I drew the two, and then we ended up winning that. And then started on the pole and just kind of paced with Lance at the beginning. Lance got to the lead early and just kind of hung around in second with him. And then, once fuel load kind of burned off and the track started getting a little bit, like, more to my liking as well, just everything kind of came together at one time. And, it was a special night because I'd never won an outlaw race, obviously, and my crew chief, Tyler, he had never won an outlaw race, and that was only Kevin Rudine's second outlaw win. So, it was really cool.
Hey, let me get into the topic of the High Limit Racing Series in the World of Outlaws. I don't know what your plans are going to be for this year, but
High Limit.
High Limit is the deal for you this year, but what do you think about, you know, I've said this many times on the air. I'm a little concerned that the High Limit Series and the World of Outlaws could fracture 410 sprint car racing a little bit. What are your thoughts on that as well?
I don't know. I've thought about it a lot, and I could see it go both ways. I could see it being really good, and if everyone doesn't play nice, I could see it going the wrong way too. And I just wish that every series would just get along. And I don't think Kyle and Brad have come in here and are trying to stir the pot, but I just think that's kind of the way it's portrayed. I think Kyle and Brad came in here and are just, trying to make the sport better, and not only for drivers and fans and teams, but, just trying to grow the sport, pay more money, make bigger shows. And I think they've kind of got this, stigma with them that they came in and are trying to ruin the World of Outlaws. And at some point it kind of does seem that way, but I don't think that's really what they're doing. I think Brad just sees the potential, and same with Kyle, and is just trying to grow the sport. And
right.
Honestly, I think Kyle raced with the late model stuff so much that he sees, like, man, these guys race for this much money. Why can't sprint cars? So I think that they're portrayed as trying to be, the number one series, and maybe they are. Maybe that is true, but I also think that they're just trying to make it better for everyone involved.
And you're going to be running, even though you're a full-time High Limit driver, you're going to be running plenty of World of Outlaw events. You guys are free to do so, right?
Yeah, we'll be. I mean, the High Limit schedule is, what, like 60 races, and we'll probably be, I would imagine, in the 90s. By the end of the year. So we'll have a lot of races to hit, between the High Limit races and outlaw races and Knoxville, PA. I mean, there would be plenty of race. We throw in a 360 every now and then and go somewhere. So, yeah, we'll be busy.
All right, Kevin Radin, that's quite a ride you jumped into. How'd that all come together for you in the 26 car?
Yeah, I was racing for a family car, and the first time I ever met Kevin, I actually won the Racer Dean Foundation race at Kokomo. And, that's honestly probably how it got started, and I didn't even know. But a year later, I don't remember where we had just got done racing, but Kevin owns Skagit Speedway and was having a dirt cup out there, and he had called and asked if I wanted to be in a second car alongside Corey. And so we went out there and raced, and then it wasn't very long after that, Kevin kind of made his decision to part ways with Corey, and then the phone call rang, and he basically offered me, the full gig, and that's not something you turn down, that's for sure. Kevin is, I'm not sure what else I would want out of a car owner. He's probably the best car owner out there, in my opinion, so
right.
I'm very fortunate to be, where I am, and very thankful for Kevin and Monica and everything they do for not only me. I mean, they do a lot behind the scenes for sprint car racing. So, very lucky and fortunate to be where I am.
Well, we're here in Kansas City, and, it was cool to have the Rudine Foundation race a couple of years ago out here at I-70, and it's going to be back at I-70 Motorsports Park this year. Your thoughts about the Rudine Foundation race? That's always a big race every year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome. I love that race, and what Marcia and Kevin and everyone do for the foundation and the foundation race is awesome. Obviously, it pays good, and, that's always a bonus. But, that race is cool. I've been fortunate enough to win it once. So, go back to I-70. Honestly, that's not always been just a place that I've been very good at. But this year, we were actually really good there. Stood on the pole and ran okay. A few driver mistakes cost us probably. But, so I think, I'm pretty confident rolling in there that we'll be pretty good. And, looking forward to it.
There you have it. All-Star Circuit of Champions, Zeb Weiss.
Good guy.
Good guy.
Man, yeah. that crash he took down there at Charlotte during the World Finals down
when
there.
When the throttle stuck?
Wicked, yeah.
Oh, man, that was a horrifying wreck.
And he's still recovering from that. I mean, for him to talk about not going to the Chili Bowl this year, make sure he gets well-rested for the new year, he's still feeling the effects of
as that. As well as what happened to him up at Knoxville as well.
Well, Eldora was
Eldora,
the big wreck out there that
Eldora.
He had.
Yeah, but things didn't go right for him up there at Knoxville this year either.
He didn't have good things to say about his performance up at Knoxville, did he? He wants to turn that around for sure.
Yeah, he comments quite a bit on the full interview. You could go to our podcast and listen to the full interview. He comments about why he's not going to be running the Chili Bowl this year, and he'll be watching.
Right.
But he wants to make sure he's completely rested up.
That's a huge loss to lose Zeb Weiss, Rico Abreu, Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell.
At the Chili Bowl?
That's a big group of drivers that are not going to be racing there this year.
Two or three at a time is
right.
One thing, but that's
you know,
five big
names.
You got four drivers that we know of right now, right?
Yeah, but I choose to look at this whole thing a lot differently than that. Yeah, I'm focused on the guys who will be there, and there's still plenty of big name stars that'll be in Tulsa this year. I like Kyle Larson. I didn't miss him at all last year. Now, Rico is a big star. He'll be back, though. He's just going to Australia this year. He'll be back. Christopher Bell, these NASCAR guys, they got no obligation to run the Chili Bowl.
Right.
Tony Stewart didn't run every year at the Chili Bowl.
Listen, just to be truthful, Christopher Bell is concentrating on his Cup career.
Yeah,
and
he wants to
win a championship over there. And I'm not sure that they would allow him to drive an open wheel car as well.
And after what happened to Alex Bowman last year driving that sprint car, well, they should make sure that they're not hurt in these sprint cars and focus in on what their big paycheck is coming from. So there's still going to be plenty of stars in Tulsa this year to focus in on. It doesn't affect my interest in the Chili
right.
Bowl, not having those guys there.
Want to give a shout out to Kelly, who's listening in from Central Point, Oregon, as well. So, Kirk, we need to take a break so we can get this Connor Wade interview in. When we come back, Connor Wade is the new pit reporter for the World of Outlaws, and we're going to have that interview that we did with him. This is a condensed version of the interview. How long was this interview, Todd?
Oh, all of them were almost 30 minutes on our show on Monday. So
yeah, no doubt. All right, so when we come back, Connor Wade joins us next right here on Track Talk. It's all brought to you by Rod End Supply, feature of the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. We'll be back with more in a moment. Stay tuned. Welcome back. It's Track Talk here on Sports Radio 810. It's all brought to you by Rod End Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. Covell back there running the show for us at Sports Radio 810 WHB. Todd Surprise running it here for RBN, the Racing Boys Broadcasting Network. And, Kirk, we couldn't be more proud of Connor Wade. He's a young guy that worked for us at the Chili Bowl, and he did an exceptional job when he worked for us, didn't he?
Yeah, and have you seen anybody start as young as Connor Wade has?
He started announcing races at 11 years old.
Yeah. What is he, 20 now? Something like that?
Yeah, 20, 21.
And his experience would say he ought to be about 30-something.
Right.
So he's been doing this a while. Connor Wade is going to take over the pit reporting duties for the NOS Energy Drink World of Outlaw Series, replacing Chase Rodman, who's now the voice of the High Limit Series.
And we're going to play Chase Rodman's interview that we did with him in hour number two.
And we're going to have both these guys on weekly during the season. Connor Wade reporting on the World of Outlaws, Chase Rodman on the High Limit Series on our Mostly Motorsports show every week.
Every week they'll be on with us, right?
So they'll check in. But Connor Wade is first. We talked with Connor on Monday, and he's excited about his new venture with the World of Outlaws.
Connor Wade joins us now. He will be the official pit reporter for the World of Outlaws. Congratulations, Connor.
Scott, Kirk, thank you very much. Merry Christmas to you guys. Great to hear from you. And, yeah, thank you. Really, really looking forward to it. Grateful to have the opportunity to cover the World of Outlaws, NOS Energy Drink Sprint Cars, and work with the great Dirt Vision team on some sprint car things. So it's going to be a fun 2024. It starts a lot sooner than you'd think down to Volusia. It'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, no doubt. And listen, we've said it many times on this show that you are very studious, and when it comes to doing your prep work, you make sure that you do it as well as anybody. I'm just saying that, to be honest with you, I think that you're as studious as anybody out there in the business.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's definitely something that I take a lot of pride in, and something I take very seriously. You know, it's something that, in my opinion, you have to do in order to do the job right. You know, you've got to spend time prepping and finding stats and finding the nuggets that, you know, you have to use to support whatever you're going to tell your viewers. If you're going to tell the viewers that you think the guy starting 20th has a chance to win, you've got to be able to back it up. You know, whether it be with stats or, you know, you talk to a driver in the pit area and they tell you that they like the racetrack or they've got their engine running good or they figured their shock package out, whatever the case may be. So I think if you're gonna do the job, you've got to do it right. You can't just go out there and, you know, tell the race fans something, you know, just to talk on a microphone. It's not really how it works. You know, you've got to be able to support whatever you're gonna say and you know, convince them that whatever you're saying is logical. So it's something I take a lot of pride in. I spend a lot of time before races, before race weekends, you know, looking through notes and stats and old races, history of the sport. I've already kind of been doing that for the World of Outlaws. So definitely something that I take a lot of pride in when it comes to my work.
And as far as the routine, you're going to hit the ground running because you've already been at Dirt Vision. You covered the Extreme Outlaw Midget Series last year. And anybody who's done the Hell Tour is going to be well prepared what's going on. So you already know how Dirt Vision works, and you'll step right in and hit the ground running.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Kirk. I joined the Dirt Vision family actually about a year ago this time. My first race for them was the indoor Power Eye Midget race to DuCoin last December. Oddly enough, that race is coming up this weekend. And yeah, it's been really great to be a part of the Dirt Vision team, or I kind of think of it as a Dirt Vision family. We're all out on the road together, working together. We all kind of have the same, you know, ideas and goals as far as what we want broadcast to look like and the image that we want the series we cover to have. So it's been great. Jim Schiappelli and Brian Dunlap just do an incredible job kind of leading the team and communicating. And then, you know, all the producers and the camera operators that you get to work with throughout the year, whether they're full-time employees at Dirt Vision or freelancers. It really was a lot of fun to work for him and do a lot of events in 2023. And then, of course, for the World Finals, I got to be in the studio. So I got to work with people face-to-face that normally I just kind of had phone calls with throughout the year, the guys and girls that run everything back in the studio in Concord. So I think that you know, we all really worked well together. We all became pretty close. And, yeah, that comfort level is already there in terms of putting on good broadcast products each and every night.
86 races. Are you prepared to run 86 races this year?
I think so. From my standpoint, I did over 100 in 2023 between Extreme, the Hell Tour, World Finals, some Super Dirt Car Series, Big Block Modified stuff, such as Super Dirt Week, a couple of you know, random freelance camera jobs here and there. So what I think will be different about 2024 is the races are a little bit more coast-to-coast, all the way from California to New York. A lot of traveling back and forth, a little bit more spread out, too. You know, the Hell Tour, there was 5 weeks in a row of races every day, and they were fairly close to each other.
Right.
You know, this is every single weekend, parts of February, and really from March through late November, it's every single weekend. So I'm prepared for it. You know, we, drivers and crews and teams have it a little bit harder than I do. I just kind of show up and talk on a microphone. You know, they've got, you know, race cars to work on. They've got trailers to work on. They're going to have probably a blowout or two on the road throughout the year. So
right.
for my stance, I'm really looking forward to it. But, you know, it is really, I think the World of Outlaws has really kind of become known as the top schedule, really, in all of dirt racing and maybe even all of motorsports, just because of grind and the gruel that it is for everybody that is on it. But I'm looking forward, really looking forward to getting on the road.
I'm not so sure that what we see with the High Limit Racing Series and the World of Outlaws, to me, I feel like that this could fracture 410 racing a little bit. Because you see a lot of the guys that were running with the World of Outlaws running over there. Jacob Allen's going to run over there. Zeb Weiss, Rico, Corey Day, Justin Peck. But you see these guys, and I don't know if you have an opinion on it or not, but my opinion is that I'm a little worried that this could fracture 410 sprint car racing. What do you think?
It's definitely an interesting time for the sport, seeing what's going on. You know, time will tell. And I'm, you know, I show up to races either to watch or to do my job. I'm not a team owner in sprint car racing right now. I don't invest a lot of, you know, my own money into it. So I don't know exactly, you know, what the books are looking like. But what I can tell you is this. I keep telling people that have asked me the same thing, you know, my opinion on that same question is, you look at the late model world right now, and they are really supporting two main national series between Lucas and the World of Outlaws, and then honestly, you even throw in XR. You throw in Flow Racing Night in America. They're supporting at least two. You could make the case for four national series, and what has come out of the late model world is guys that really, really can make a living running a national tour. You see guys that you wouldn't really expect to run a national tour that are able to go and do it just because the money is so good for them, you know, on whichever tour they can decide to run. So I think late model racing has done a really good job of it. It's kind of, it's incentivized the series, I think, to raise the stakes a little bit. You've seen the World of Outlaw late models add in a lot of contingency money, bonus programs. I think you get a couple grand every month or so just for showing up and being top 10 in points. I know top 13 in World of Outlaw late model points are on a Hoosier Tire deal. I know there's a really great Rookie of the Year program that pays the top 3 in points with the late models. I know the Lucas Oil late models have a ton of contingencies, such as the Crown Jewel Cup and stuff like that. So I think that's really gotten the series to up the ante a lot, just in terms of the money that they make available to the drivers. And I can't help but think that the same is going to happen to sprint car racing. We've already seen it, I think, to an extent. Obviously, High Limits put us money up, but the World of Outlaws, NOS Energy during sprint cars have brought things up as well. More bigger paying races. They brought purses up. They did increase tow money for full-time teams that committed by December 1. So I think ultimately the same thing is going to end up happening to sprint car racing in the next 3 to 4 years.
That is the new pit reporter for the NOS Energy Drink World of Outlaws series, Connor Wade.
He's going to do a great job.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, he'll step right in and pick up where Chase Rodman
If there
left
was
off.
Anybody to replace Chase Rodman, Connor Wade is the guy to do it. And he's so studious.
Well, you know what? What he's got an advantage stepping right in here. He's already been working for Dirt Vision and knows their routine and knows how that all lays out. He did the Extreme Outlaw Midget Series last year. He did the Hell Tour, so he can step right in. He knows the ways of Dirt Vision and how that all works, and he'll do a great job.
No doubt about it.
Hey, I wanted to get one thing in.
We want to remind everybody that we have the interview with Chase Rodman, and that interview is 13 minutes and 42 seconds long, and we're going to play that in hour number two.
Yeah.
Right?
So we'll hear from Chase Rodman, the new voice for the High Limit series. Want to clarify one thing about Jade Abedishian and Taylor Reimer. They're both Toyota development drivers. The only difference is Jade just signed a multi-year extension, an agreement that kind of moves that even forward than what she had. Taylor, already a Toyota development driver. We'll see if she gets the same deal that Jade did just recently.
What we need Jade Avedisian to get is a ride in the truck series. I think she'd do really good over there. Don't you think so?
Another year.
Yeah.
I would go another year with what she has planned. She's going to get some pavement experience. But she's still 17 years old, Scott.
Right.
She's got some time.
She's got a little
bit of
time.
There's no need to rush Jade or Taylor, who I think you agree that Taylor has really improved her stock even over the last month.
Oh, no doubt about it. She's running up front a little bit more than she has been.
And they're both going to continue to drive midgets. Right. They're just neither one going to go for championships because they've got all this pavement.
Right.
Deals that they've worked out now over the next year.
Kirk, so what do you think about we'll save it for hour number two, but we're going to talk a little bit about the High Limit series in the World of Outlaws in hour number two, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Continue what we've been talking about, right?
Well,
big topic of conversation.
That is the big topic of conversation.
Yeah, what everybody's talking about.
And I'm a little shocked on how many drivers have defected from the World of Outlaws over to the High Limit Series.
A lot of it has to do with the charter system that they've developed.
Right.
And we found out details about that over the last week. So,
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why the High Limit Series is signing a lot of drivers right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, we want to thank everybody for tuning in to Track Talk here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Don't forget, hour number two, you can watch it on our Facebook page. You can watch it on YouTube, and you can watch it on RacingBoys.com as well. That's hour number two, exclusively on RBN, the Racing Boys Broadcasting Network. Kirk, you got anything to add?
Can we get the Chiefs back on track this weekend? Can we do it?
I think we can do it.
The Patriots, they ain't going to lose to the Patriots, are they?
No, they're not going to lose to the Patriots. I don't think so.
Go Chiefs.
Go Chiefs. All right, thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's called Track Talk, and it's all brought to you by Rod End Supply, featuring the Power Eye Midwest Lightning Sprints. For Covell, for Todd Surprise, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor saying we'll see you, hour number two, coming up on Facebook and YouTube.